my perfect alter self. My perfect alter self. This morning we had a little talk on, as I recognize perfection, I experience it. I see perfection in all. I know only perfection. I am perfection. Now, what is our perfect alter self? We say, well, it must be something the opposite of perfection. No, no. Our perfect alter self is our perfection. We are pretending that we're human beings, and we're pretending that we have human bodies, we're pretending that we have human lifespans and all that sort of good thing, and we're not. We're not. We are our reality, our alter self, is our perfection, our purity. The temporary self, the illusionary self, is the person that's walking around here. Now today, we have spent time walking around Mount Shasta here, and knowing that within Mount Shasta are many great caverns and meeting rooms and various other things like that that masters of various natures use. This is what we've been told, at least. And so we tend to believe that it's a possibility, that there's a good feeling here in this mountain. Is it really true that master consciousnesses do come to this mountain, and masters do come here to meet and to get their balance back, working as they do with humans? Is this a true thing? And the comment is made by some people that it's a good joke. It's a good made-up creation, that we're not telling really the truth. We're just making a fiction, a pleasant fiction. And it is a pleasant fiction, that's true. But it's also a pleasant truth. And like Ellen pointed out, that anything that we can visualize or consider is quite likely the truth, only we have not known it. Although, that's not what I'm working with you on here. Something that quite likely will be the truth. It is the fact. Now, all of you would like to know what Mount Shasta is, and you'd like to know what these places are. In fact, you'd like to go visit them. And I have taken you to visit them any number of times in our out-of-body journeys. I've taken you into Mount Shasta. I've taken you into the chamber of the balancing. I've taken you into the learning chambers. I've taken you into the chambers of study, being creative, using the inner imagination beyond what society is doing today. Now, could those beings in Mount Shasta, in those creative centers, their think tank rooms, could they come up with something better than is being done by humanity today? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes, but why are you saying humanity today? Why don't you say humanity at any time into infinity? Why don't you say humanity year 3,000, year 50,000, year 100,000, year whatever you want? Why limit yourself to just humanity today? And this is what we do. We limit it because that's the potential of our thinking capacity. The potential of our thinking capacity is to think in the realms that we understand, to think in the realms that we know today, the things that are being done today. How would you visualize an automobile in year 3000? That's not far away, but in the year 3000, how would you visualize an automobile? Well, it would have wheels, it would have an engine, it'd have seats, it'd have mechanisms to operate the engine and turn the wheels and go places. That's what we have now. What's the big deal? Let your imagination soar into the possibilities of what travel in a vehicle might be in the year 3000. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have the capacity. This double doesn't don't. That doesn't mean you don't have the capacity to travel in many other ways. But what would be a way of traveling for someone who wanted to travel in a mundane way? Well, we visualize cars that go along the highway with gadgets that control them by the center power unit along the highway, and they drive at a certain speed, and when they have programmed that they're going to get off, the car automatically goes off that offshoot and you take over at that point. And of course, if you're sleeping, then it automatically goes off and it recognizes that you're sleeping, so it moves it over to a parking spot until you're ready to wake up. Why should it let you crash? You know, it senses and knows all these things, and it's an exciting thing. Now, that is a fact car. That car you may not have seen, but it is a fact. Popular science said various universities are working on those cars. They're called thought-controlled cars. In fact, there was a movie out not too long ago where a thought-controlled car was created by these kids in college. And the thought-controlled car went all sorts of places, did all sorts of things, except the thought-controlled car had a couple of blind spots. And if anything came at it at that blind spot, you know, like here, I have a blind spot. I can't see. I got a window there and a window here, but I can't see right where that is unless I get around here and see it. So they found these blind spots, and they put mirrors, prisms, television cameras, whatever were necessary, so that blind spot wouldn't be there. It's a 360-degree vision, which is very nice. Yeah. That's even too normal. You want something really far out, really imaginative. Now, what would a vehicle be that would be kind of fun to be in? Well, a vehicle that wouldn't need tires to be changed. So, it's a vehicle that doesn't go on the ground. It can go next to the ground and sit on the ground, but it just flies along above the ground. Now, it might be a hovercraft. They have those. Or it might be a helicopter or a gyrocopter or something of that nature. Something that's just fun to use and that just goes along. Okay, now, so much for the propulsion of the vehicle. What about the appointments inside the vehicle? A vehicle that sophisticated quite likely could be manual or automatic. You put it to manual when you want to play and you want to drive it through the jungles and various other places and you want to just have lots of fun. Or you put it in automatic. And then what kind of vehicle is it? It takes you wherever you want to go, to whatever you want to do, at any time you want to do it. But if you're going formal, you know what that means, to go formal? If you're going formal, wearing a tuxedo and tie and coat and tail, or just a dress suit, or just something nice because you're going to a special restaurant, and your wife might be wearing a cocktail dress, or she might be wearing a full gown or whatever, so you would have your evening car. And your evening car would be there because you think it there. It's out of the pool of cars that exist. And so you say, well, we're going to the opera tonight, and do we like a car? My wife's formal gown goes so many feet this way and so many feet this way, and we want to keep it from getting crunched. And so the car that's perfectly suited for her comes to your door. You go out and you use it. When you're finished, you just close the door, and the car returns to its place of origin, and your credit card is charged for it. Hey, that's cool, you know. Is the credit card going to be honestly charged for it? Of course. This is the day when things like that happen, this year 3000. There is no dishonesty. There is no crookedness. Ooh, what a one. Let's hurry up and have the year 3000, mm-hmm. Right? But what's going to happen? What would happen when you start really using your mind to think on realms that you had never thought about? You would come up with ideas that were unbelievable. You'd come up with engines that were fantastic. Now, Mr. Ford's first engine was a nice engine. Didn't do very well. It didn't have very good mileage. That is, it didn't have very much speed. It didn't have very much mileage per gallon and things like that. Maybe 2 miles to a gallon or something like that. That drinks a lot. But it was their first model. And so they put it in their little museum. And each succeeding model, as successful as it was, they put it in their little museum. And when aliens come along, or people who are not familiar with it, and see these cars, they say, "Is that Mr. Ford's car?" Yeah, 40 years ago. Because it's totally different now. It's a beautiful, strong, powerful vehicle. It's not cheaply built like it was earlier days because they were trying to make all the big sales. It is really a wonderful thing. So these are things that people in the mountain, masters, would be working on. They would not be working on mundane things that scientists in their laboratories are producing today, because that's so common. The scientists are only producing those things that they can conceive a need for, that they can conceive a use of. Whereas you, in your master consciousness, go into your think tank and you think things that you don't even know that have a use. You think things that might have a little chip in it or something. And so you get this object, this piece of glass, for instance, and you take it to your laboratory, and you work on it, and you need it to fill a spot. And so you just facet it or cut it so it fits perfectly. Now, that's ordinary. In the year 3000, a person needs a piece of glass to fit something and needs it faceted. He would just think, okay, I need a piece of glass that is 2 5/8 by 3 17/16, you know. And you'd have that perfect piece of glass. Then you say, it is to fit perfectly in here. And you don't say what the dimensions are. It's just to fit perfectly. And it fits. And then there it is. Now you say, gee, that would be great. They do things like that now. They do things like that. Mark, new design computer program, which cost about $5,000 just for the software, it is designed to do things in that very, very way. And he's learning how to do things with it and learning how to utilize it already, because it's just such a fun thing. Okay. Why would we, you and I, in Mount Shasta, in the think tanks, think mundane things that anyone else might be thinking about without going into Mount Shasta? The reason you sometimes want to think mundane things is because you don't know any unmundane things to think about. You think that mundane things are the most important in the world. My dad used to figure his plans on the dining room table. He was a building contractor, and he would bring home all these blueprints, and then he'd figure out what it cost for this and cost for that, and he would be working away. And occasionally, he would just say, "Nope, don't want it. Just chuck it. Dump it right in the wastebasket." And I thought, my goodness, why is he doing that? You know, I was 10, 12 years old. I thought, what a waste of nice paper, for one thing, and beautiful drawings. The stuff looks great, you know, but there were some errors in it, which my dad found, and he wrote a note to the architect, and he says, "This was forgotten in that plan, this was forgotten, and if you don't build that, you can't build the foundation the way you want it, and if you don't put it into the plans, no one will know exactly what they're building and what they're supposed to be making." You see, in the think tank that we're working in Mount Shasta, and that you're working in, is a think tank that is so broad, it's a perfect alter self of yourself. It goes way beyond anything that you can imagine of yourself doing right now. And when do you go there? And what do you do there individually? When do you go there? Well, when do you go there? What are you doing in your night sleeps? What are you doing when you go to bed? Puff, you're gone. And you don't remember being anywhere. You don't remember experiencing anything. You just think, wow, I am having this great experience. And then someone says to you, "Well, now, what did you dream about last night?" "Oh, I don't know. I had so many strange dreams. I dreamt about working in this laboratory. And I dreamt about working with these pitot tubes and working with all this distilled water and putting all these chemicals into it. And, you know, it stunk something terrible, but there was something about it that seemed very good. So then I began adding other chemicals to it as I was instructed within myself to do it. And pretty soon I had flubber. Pretty soon I had some unknown chemical composition. But I made a mistake. Anyone tell me what the mistake was? I did not write down the formula when I was doing it. And so here I am with this lovely formula that's so desirable, and all I have is a prototype. I have maybe a gallon of this flubber, and it's going to last so long because people pull it apart, it's going to wear out and things like that, and I won't know how to make any more. How should I go about doing it? Now, if you're in a human world, if you're a human physicist and human think tank person, you say that's it. But you're divine. And so you say to yourself, I know how to do it this way, and I know how to do it this way. I know how to do it inspirationally, and I know how to do it intellectually. I know the formula. I know exactly how to do it. And then you go about doing it. And when you go doing it, you come up with the same beautiful cake, pastry, or whatever it is that you were making. And they are really fun. They are really exciting. But it is not in today's focus. So again, you wake up in the middle of the night and you say, ooh, I got a headache. What is this all about? Well, you have a headache because you're working in a dimension outside of your own dimension of time and space. You're working outside of your own relativity awareness, which is the field of baking and cooking of a specific thing. You say, well, Herb, what's this all got to do with anything? This has a lot to do with everything. Because you are the creator of your world. And you create all of these various avenues in which you work and express yourself. And as you create them, you get money for it. As you create them, you are appreciated for it. As you create them, you feel successful and happy about it. But that's not true. As you create them, you are moved into other areas, so you never get to see it grow up. As you are working with a child and it's growing up and you create them beautifully, they change. And they don't know my dad anymore or daddy. They just know Mr. So-and-so, if they know anything at all. But how do they change it? How do they come up with this new awareness of who they are? It's a real test. It's a real test for each of us to know where we are in our spiritual path, on our spiritual path, working in with the divine self. And working with the divine self, we are not working, so to speak, at home. We are working away. We are not working in a familiar surroundings. We're working in unfamiliar surroundings. Most people who work in a familiar surroundings, they feel so comfortable, they feel so good about it, they don't do things properly. They don't keep notes on the experiments they're working with. They don't have the inspiration of working in a company office where they're inspired by their fellow workers, either good or bad. But this inspiration is something very important. It's part of our alter self. It's part of our alter self. What are you doing in Mount Shasta? What are you thinking in Mount Shasta? Why are you in Mount Shasta at all? Are you in Mount Shasta? Who's to say? Herb says you're in Mount Shasta, then you're in Mount Shasta. But that's not right. That's not the answer. What is the answer of why you're in Mount Shasta? Anybody have that answer?
Because I know that I am in Mount Shasta.
Right. You know that you are there. Same for you?
Yes.
Okay. You know that you are there. Well, how'd you get there? Are you there all the time? How did you get there from wherever you are? Say, for instance, you're, What?
As an omnipresent being, I'm there also.
Yeah, but the thing is, you don't know omnipresent being just yet. You know about it.
Yes.
You know it intellectually, but you don't know it from first-hand experience. Now, how do you learn from first-hand experience the omnipresent being? I know who I am, I know what I build, I know what I like, I know where I'm going. How do you create such a thing? Very easy. You create such a thing by putting a cause in motion for exactly who and what you are. You create that by putting the cause in motion that you are wherever you want to be. Now, what is it you would like to be in Mount Shasta? What is it that you would like to be doing? We talk about Stefan being a bouncer. Now, Stefan did not know he was a bouncer. I described it to him, and he said, yeah, that's very conceivable that that was something I would do. Now, what's very conceivable that you would do, Sylvia? What's conceivable for you?
For me?
Anita, what's conceivable for you? Stefan, what's conceivable for you, other than being a bouncer? Christine, have you any conceivable thought of what you would be doing in Mount Shasta, such as a bouncer or a researcher or whatever?
Yes.
Have you thought of anything?
Think tanker.
Yeah, think tanker. Greg, what's conceivable for you? Think about it. These are neat, neat things that we're doing. And Gertrude, what about you? What would you consider for yourself doing in Mount Shasta? You'd like to be a bouncer too. Now, why? Is this something you feel comfortable with? And is it something you have been doing in many areas of your life, all of your life? And so you'd really be just stepping into full-time work as a bouncer, whereas before you were a bouncer temporarily, right? Neat. Well, now, what does it mean to Gertrude to be a bouncer? Where would she go as a bouncer? Would she remain as a universal bouncer, working with everybody? Or would she have certain groups of people that she worked with? What do you think?
Certain groups, probably.
Yeah, she'd probably have certain groups of people. Now, why would she have certain groups of people?
It's a choice.
Yeah. But she'd have certain groups of people because she is a certain group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And she is comfortable with people who speak Switzerland. She is comfortable with people who speak German a little bit, right? You're comfortable with people who speak French. You're learning to be that way because your son is married a French girl. But, you see, these are things that we're comfortable with. Now, what sort of balancing would Gertrude do in the School of the Master or in Mount Shasta? What sort of thing would she do? The two are quite similar. What kind of balancing would you do? Would you do balancing like Stefan does? People who come in with conviction and then they get well over a few days or a week or so, and during the process they're weighted on hand and foot and they really don't want to be well. We think of that. We believe in it, we know it, and then we experience it. When Gertrude recognizes this for herself, that that's what she wants to do, that's what she believes she can do, then everything will work out for her to experience that. And once she's there, she may not want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
What would she do if once she's there and she doesn't want to do it? What do you think you would do, Gertrude? Any idea? If you didn't want to do it once you're there, choose something else. Is it so terrible that you look with such respect and awe on something like your choice of what to do? No, you just do what you want to do. Is there any thing that could happen to you if you didn't do what you were designed to do or told to do? What could happen? What could happen is that you just make a change. You just make a change and be yourself. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It matters only yourself and have fun. And if you don't be yourself and have fun, then everything's going to fall apart on you. Because if you're using it for manipulation of hurting another, if you're using it to bring another person into your world, if you're using it to make another person do something that you wouldn't do, well, what would happen to you? You'd feel very bad inside yourself. You'd feel very, very troublesome about what you were facing, because you were not true to yourself. And you don't want to be troublesome to what you're facing. You want to be right on top of everything. And what is a balancer? A balancer is a person who's right on top of everything. No judgment. Unconditional love. My goodness, those are wonderful words, aren't they? Untouchability. All that beautiful stuff. So this is what we're talking about when we say my perfect alter self. My perfect alter self is doing whatever I wish to do, whenever I wish to do it, even while I'm doing something else. Many times in giving lectures, people are working on ideas for the lecture, working on different illustrations, because they're talking to a group of people who are not aware of some of the things that they were talking to with another group of people on the same subject. And so they switch from this particular type of illustration, revealing that stuff, to the type that reveals whatever it is they're doing right at the moment. This is a fun thing. It's a fun thing, this alter ego thing. It's a fun program, but we have to really determine what values it is to us. Now, let's, before we go further onto that, let's think about this Mount Shasta thing. Let's think, what is this here? Where are the entrances? How do we get into it? We talked about that the other day. And we said that the entrances are very obvious, but inobvious. You just walk around a stone, and there you can just walk through the stone. You don't walk through the stone, but it appears that it's stone. But it's not. It's just an electronic field. And you're welcome in there, and you walk through. Other places, you walk into something, and it's not an electronic field. It's nothing else, but it's maybe a master's shoes are sitting there. And so you put on these master's shoes, and of course, they instantly fit you. And then you walk in them. Now, where do these master's shoes take you?
That's fun.
These master shoes will take you into the pyramid. It'll take you into the Mount Shasta's beautiful. There are pyramids in Mount Shasta too, but it will take you into these beautiful workshops. It will take you into these sacred areas, and you will never want to come out. You can, because you have only come in there under walking in someone else's shoes. And no, it's true. This happens. And many times, Papa steps on Junior's skateboard and starts sailing and flying around, and he's not too happy about it. But we can always use this stuff. We can always have a ball. You like that, huh? We can always go traveling. And I was just traveling in it. We can always go. And I was going to say skateboarding and, you know, roller skating and things like that. But when you step on your kid's skateboard, you start to have an adventure you didn't expect. Well, this is just like stepping in somebody else's shoes. It's like going into Mount Shasta. You're going to have some experiences that you didn't expect, and some very dynamic experiences. You can't hurt yourself. You can't hurt yourself. You can't fall down. You can't crack your crown. You can't scratch yourself in any way. No matter what you do in Mount Shasta, you cannot in any way damage yourself. You cannot feel limited. You cannot feel overwhelmed. Overwhelmed, yes, a little bit, because it's so wonderful. But not because it's above you or beyond you. But everything is just so exciting. Exciting and fulfilling. Okay? Now, when you're doing this, how do you get from here to there? I know. We'd like to have the key. We'd like to have the program of how to get from here to there, how to get into Mount Shasta, how to handle these things. Well, let me say this, and then I'll say something else. I cannot tell you how to get into here, because that's not accepted. I can tell you how to get in there, but you won't listen. I can tell you right to your face how to get in Mount Shasta and how to set that program to work with you as the master of it right now. And you won't hear me. I was just thinking of some of the ways of telling you how to get in there, and then my mind immediately passed away from it and it says, that is not yet the time. Herb, you're playing with us. You're playing with us, telling us that we can do this, and we can't do this, and we can't do this. Yes, I am, and I'm not. It's just like wanting to tell your child how to drive a car when your child is not big enough to sit on the seat of the car and reach the pedals. And you tell your child how it is, you sit them on your lap and they can look out the windshield there and they can turn the steering wheel, but you're there to move the gears, you're there to do anything, the gas pedal and anything else. And unfortunately, that's the way it is at the moment. I don't mean to say that's the way you are, but that's the way you are. If I tell you these things, you will know how, but you're going to be like driving a car when you're just a couple years old. It's not that you shouldn't know it, and not that you're inferior to it. In fact, there are many children who are at work in Mount Shasta, many children. Many youngsters, ages, start out usually about 3 months, and on up. 3 months, can you imagine that? 3 months, because it is such a solid, sincere type program. And what was a 3-month-old kid doing in Mount Shasta? Think about it. What's the first thing that a little child would do in Mount Shasta? Well, he'd just be having fun. He would find the toy room. Toy room is the experimental room where all the projects that are being worked on that didn't quite fulfill themselves are tossed. And this is where the kids love to play. Could he learn anything? Could he learn in Mount Shasta how to teleport, levitate, walk on fire, or do any of these things? Yes. Mm-hmm. But a 2-month-old baby could do that? Mm-hmm. Sure. Very easily. What about his parents? Just, you don't ask a silly question. That child may be there 1 second, mm-hmm. and that second will be a lifetime. Because in that second, you know how kids are gathering around children. There'd be so many children gathering around this child, sharing with them their intellectual prowess. And the little kid would demonstrate skills that were unbelievable. What kind of skill would he demonstrate, huh? He would demonstrate skills of speaking at 2 months? Sure. Why does a child not speak when it is born? As soon as it gets its mouth open and eyes open. It does not speak because it has taken all of the elements of speech away from itself. Because now, if all time is now, and the kid is 2 months old, and in 6 months or 6 years, the kid will speak perfectly, why can't the kid speak perfectly at 2 months? Because race consciousness says it can't do that. And so they withhold that as a concept in the mind of the child, and the mind of the parents, and the mind of their world. So when that concept is no longer there, the kid can speak. Does the kid have the brain to speak? Of course. It's born with a brain to think. The brain to think anything it wants to think. And when a child uses that brain at 2 months, beautiful things happen. We know parents who have worked with their children and talked to their children while they're in the womb yet, and they come out valiant and beautiful. In the School of the Masters, in the work being done here at Mount Shasta, they have a very special place for people who are ill. Yeah. People who are sick come here, they teleport here, they get here, however, and when they come here, what do they experience? Does anyone lay their hands on them?
No. They balance themselves out.
They balance themselves out, like Gertrude and Stefan and Elias and Jan and...
And Ellen.
Yeah, but you see, Ellen isn't quite doing a full-time job yet for a number of reasons. And one of the reasons that Ellen's not doing a full-time job yet is that Ellen feels that she's not balanced herself. Now, if you talk to Elias, he's balanced, right? Wouldn't he say that he is?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And would Jan say he's balanced?
Yes.
Very much. Would Stefan say he's balanced?
Yes.
Why would Stefan say he's balanced? It gives him the opportunity to think that he's balanced.
But everyone who is a balancer is balancing himself.
Why would you say that somebody like Stefan is balanced?
Well, that's just how I see it.
Stefan would say that he is balanced because he is not really worried about anything. A few little things come through his mind, but generally he is on top of it. Generally, he looks at life with a smile on his face, doesn't he?
Okay.
Generally, he has that sort of devil-may-care attitude about him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you know other teachers who have that? Very few. Very few. Because they feel they have such a great responsibility that they have to be not intelligent, they have to be serious about what they're doing. And that's silly. Yeah, that's silly. And the moment they lose this feeling of seriousness about themselves, they become wonderful teachers.
Yeah.
When are you at your peak as a teacher? Hmm?
When there's nothing to teach.
You're at your...
You're
at your peak of being a teacher when you thoroughly enjoy doing what you're doing and you just do it for the fun of it.
Yeah.
And if somebody wants to learn, super.
See, from that point of view, I can totally see Elias.
Mm-hmm. Nice, huh?
Yes.
But why not you?
Yeah, I'm seeing myself quite.
What is it that you're polishing right at the moment?
Exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Any one area of it or all of it?
All.
Mm-hmm. But now, let's just take another point. You're doing this balancing. And Elias is doing this balancing. How can you expect to have a home relationship when you are having this unhome relationship? When you're having this relationship with yourself in Mount Shasta, how could you balance yourself?
How? By liking myself and believing in myself.
Now, what if you lose one of those balancings?
And minding my own business.
Well, if this is what you're doing, you got it made. And if it's not what you're doing, you'll know that you don't have it made.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But my work is not to teach the basics like this. It's to teach the flow. You have the ability to bounce, and you also have the ability to say, when you go to the store and you want to buy flowers, and there's no flowers there, why are there no flowers there?
Because I didn't create them.
Because you don't want to buy flowers. If you go to a store and you're not thinking about flowers, and then here's a whole lot of flowers, and you say, "Oh, that's neat. My wife would like that. My husband would like that." What? Why did that happen? What caused that to be? That before you had to go to the store and buy flowers, and they were there. Now they're not there. Why is it they're not there? Because you didn't want to buy them. A simple thing. But I wanted to buy them. I had that in mind. I was going to do that. Remember the little cartoon with this man going to the complaint department and he turning something in that he had bought for his wife. And the girl behind the window says to him, "You really didn't want to buy her anything anyhow, did you?" You see, the fact is that he had no intention of buying her something, and what he picked up for her was something totally off the wall, something totally not to her liking and certainly not to his, or else he would have kept it for himself. We know these things. We know these things. We know these things about ourselves. Are you ready and willing and able to take over and have fun with a program such as this? Are you ready, willing, and able to speak of positive things and live a positive life? That's a tough thing. That's a tough thing. Not too tough, but it's tough.
What did you want to say about, you started to talk about the people who go to Manchester who are ill?
Yes, you like that, huh?
Well,
now, the people who go to Mount Shasta who are ill, they have a very special training program there. There are many people who come there who are not yet ready to speak their word and claim the truth about themselves and live this wholeness, and yet they want this experience. And so, I've told you about this before, they have these very special beds there.
Yes,
and very special beds there, and you just go and you lie down in this bed, and they put the cover down, and you're in there, and you're covered by this wonderful bubbly substance, and you're in there for 2 or 3 minutes. They open the cover, and you get out, and you are like 10 years younger, and you're whole and perfect.
Nice.
Now, does that sound terrible?
No,
it sounds terrible. It takes away your right to manifest your wholeness and perfection yourself. So you need that thing to get whole and perfect from anything.
Ah, because you can't speak your word yet.
Yeah, you can't speak your word yet. So that really is not doing a good thing for people, but it works. It is something very wonderful.
Mm.
And,
But how can people go there if they don't know about it?
You know, when people have a desire in their heart for healing, they have a desire in their heart for someone else's healing.
They call
the University of Healing.
Yes.
Yeah. And when they have this desire, it opens up magic for them. The man who wants his wife to be well can push her wheelchair up a mountain. And he can also push it into Mount Shasta. Now, do you think he knows where to go? Do you think he knows where station platform 9 3/4 is? This is what we have to appreciate. These things can happen, and these things do happen. They're quite amazing. They're quite wonderful. But I digress a little bit. Our perfect alter self is what moves us into Mount Shasta. It moves us into these experiences and moves us into the awareness of what is important for us. Now, what is important for us? Being ourselves and having fun. What is it that we want to do at Mount Shasta? We want to do that which we are most talented in. If you're a cook, you want to cook. But who needs to cook? You just think your thought and it's done. Yes, that's true. But somebody's got to think their thought. Now, so you're working on your machinery or you're working on your art. You're working on anything. You don't think about eating, do you? The great painters and artists and musicians, while they're composing or creating some particular piece of object of art, and they're not thinking of food. Well, someone thinks of it for them. Mother. You know, servant or something. Well, there is a place for every talent in Mount Shasta. There is a place for every genius. There is a place for every opportunity in Mount Shasta. And you say, well, we're here because we sort of believe this thing, you know, but it's kind of far out. Yes, it is, isn't it? It's kind of far out. But why is it far out? Only because it is not being demonstrated by everybody, everywhere. could we create a humanity, if I might say that word, can we create a group of people who live by that? Why is it some people see flying saucers and others don't? Why is it we saw these beautiful pictures of the reticular clouds there that he photographed, and they look just like a spaceship hovering over Mount Shasta here? Why would a spaceship want to hover over Mount Shasta? Silly, isn't it? What good is a spaceship going to do for Mount Shasta? Or what good is a spaceship going to do letting down its cargo on Mount Shasta? They'll freeze their buckets off, you know. And that's not very, very profitable. But why do they do these things? They don't. They don't. Why do spaceships come in the first place? They don't. They're already here. They're always here. We only know so much of the universe that we choose to be ready for ourselves. We know only so much of Mount Shasta as we choose to be ready for. And when we're ready for the dynamic experiences that take place in Mount Shasta, then, boy, oh boy, do the doorways open up for us. Yeah. We probably should work on getting in, now that we're here. We should work on driving our motorhome right in. And have it be rejuvenated, if such is our desire, you know. Of course, if it's our desire, we'd probably come out and it wouldn't need any wheels. It wouldn't need any leveling device. It would just always be level wherever we chose to have it. But that sounds like a pleasant fiction. But it's not. It's the truth.
Yeah.
What?
I leave you the driver's seat.
Oh, isn't she nice? She's going to leave me the driver's seat. Yeah. Yeah, you'll drive. Good for you. Yeah, I'm sure all of you would like to drive. And you'd all do a good job, too. And you'd go straight into the right place. Ellen, you've read enough of Harry Potter to know what 9 3/4
mean.
What does 9 3/4 mean? What does it mean? Now, you don't divide up 9 3/4. But what does 9 3/4 mean? If you don't feel like answering it, we'll let somebody else.
I don't feel
okay.
It.
Yes?
The invisible entrance.
9 3/4 is a symbol for the invisible entrance into what? Yeah?
The Hogwarts train.
Yeah.
The Hogwarts train, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, now, where does that train go? Right into Wizardville, right?
Yeah.
When you find that opening, now here Harry Potter was a very remarkable young wizard, wasn't he? Did he find that place because he was so fine?
They told him where it is.
Huh?
They told him where it is.
They said, go right there and go through.
And
run a bit.
Yeah, and run a bit. But who told him?
And the invitation it was.
It was written, isn't it?
No. Mrs. Weasley told him.
Mrs. Weasley had her kids going there.
Yeah.
And Mr. Weasley, wasn't it Mr. Weasley? No, just
no,
Mrs.
Mrs.
Just Mrs., yeah. And so they were all going to school.
Yeah.
And Harry was watching them, brilliant red-haired kids, you know, and then they disappear. And so Harry wanted to be close to one of them. He asked Mrs. Weasley, mm-hmm. and she said, oh, come, dear, just like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a Mrs. Weasley in your life?
Yes, Herbert Violet.
But I don't see you with your trunks of wizard materials and things like that. Not that that's important.
They're stored underneath.
Oh, they're stored underneath. Oh, I see you're taking the motorhome, and you did mention that. That's true. Okay. Well, let's think about it.
Let's go. Let's drive in here.
If it were so easy, that would be nice. I have worked with many of you for days, weeks, months, and years, and I have asked you to do some simple little things, and you refused to do it because you thought something else was more fun. And so you're not doing it. Can you do it? When do you really show your worthiness of doing something like that? When do you really show it? Anita? When do you really show your worthiness of doing something like going into 9 3/4 or going into Mount Shasta?
No.
I said, when do you really show it?
When I can do anything you ask.
When you follow your own discipline. You follow instructions. You follow the program. You want to learn how to walk on fire, you've got to follow that program. You don't must do anything, but if you don't follow that program, you're going to have singed fingers and you're going to say, I don't want that, I don't believe in it. But if you follow the program, you'll just walk through that program like nothing flat. Nothing at all.
That seems to be easy.
Yes?
Lots of people do that at the final.
All the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. And lots of people go in to the program who are not ready. I think that each of us should be given an opportunity to work in that area, though, because we deserve it. You deserve it. And it's something that is a lot of fun. You say, well, don't talk about it, let's do it. Let's do it. Well, when Jan, rather Patrick, was working and he wanted to work with me as his share, I said I had to talk with his current share to see if that was acceptable with him. And I did. And his current share said, if you want him, you can have him. He's a tough nut. Good guy, but a tough nut. So I told him that his share said I could be working with him. And he said, oh, good, now I don't have to do anything. Yeah. Oh, good, now I don't have to do anything about him. But you take him on. So I took him on. And I said, okay, Patrick, this is what your share said. And he said, oh, no, I'm a good guy. And so I asked him to do certain things. And he had so many diversions that it was hard for him to do those things. He was able to do it easily. But the diversions kept him away. Now, why did he have the diversions? Who would have given him diversions when he had so much other work to do? Who would have given him the diversions?
Himself.
And why?
Because he didn't really want to do it.
Was it that he didn't want to do the job or that he liked the diversions?
He liked the diversions.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And the diversions were girls, you know. You know those things? And he spent his time chasing them with a great joy and catching them oftentimes, which to him was very, very wonderful. But they were a diversion that kept him from walking the path he wanted to walk. And this is true for a lot of you guys yet. You have these diversions that keep you from walking the path you say you want to walk. And when they keep you from walking the path you say you want to walk, then of course you don't get the results either. You don't get the results. I try to divert all of you, especially those who are driving and those who are running the program here. I try to divert you so that you'll get confused. And my goodness, you should see the dishes I wash at night. Nobody stands around here washing dishes at night. And I have a dishwasher and I can stick it in there, but I don't use it. But while I'm washing dishes at night, I see all of these diversions coming into play in all your lives. That's one of the only blessings of that is that you don't have to dry them, because you just think them dry and they're dry. And you think them put away and they're put away. And you think them perfect, and they're perfect. If they had a chip or anything out of them, you just see them perfect, and they're perfect. You're not a creator of things, and yet you are. You're a creator of everything that you enjoy, and your creativity goes to wherever it is you want it to go. If you want to create something happy or healthy for yourself, you create it, and you speak your word for it, and you have it. But walking the master path, walking the path of Mount Shasta, that's a pretty demanding thing. We're going to continue talking about that, but it's a pretty demanding thing. And it's demanding just like it's demanding being a human being. What do human beings do? Human beings like diversions. They like anything to come along to divert their attention. Oh, I'm glad you came along. I didn't want to work anyhow. And we can stop that. We can put our attention finitely, particularly on what we want to do, and then let the work ethic go through us and enjoy it and experience it and be masters in it. And you can. Yeah. This is quite something. It would be so easy if I could just plain tell you or take you into the mountain. I can do it in out-of-body journeys, and that's a real place, but I can't do it in elsewise. And the reason that I can't do it in elsewise is because if I tell you, which I can tell you, you won't hear it. If I say it to you, you won't understand it. How big is the window over here? 30 by 80. That's a big window. Does it appear to be a window? No. Does it appear to be something different? Yep. Why don't you tell us where it is? I did. Did you see it? No. Could you see it? Sure. Do others see it? Yep. How many people see flying saucers and we don't? How many people see miracles taking place around him? Many. But most don't. And the reason people don't see miracles taking place around him is that they don't believe they're really possible. Silly. Very smart. Very smart. People just don't see it. I want you to have that experience, and you will have that experience, because I'm teaching you basics. I'm teaching you fundamental things as the Art and Science of Wholeness, Song of Spirit, Illumination, all these courses and the other books, the other courses that are coming along. And they're teaching you not to be judgmental. Oh, he has a bike and I don't have one. Well, ask him if you can ride it. Hey, can I ride your bike? Sure. So I get on this bike. How do you stop this thing? How do you start this thing? How do you, you know? And you're confused because it's different from your bike. Your bike is a three-wheeler, and this is a two-wheeler. A whole new ball of game. And when you can just release, why did you even bother buying the inner tube? Why did you even bother buying the tire set? You didn't need it. But you knew that it had a certain mystery attached to it. And that mystery was what you wanted. The mystery that was attached to it is what you wanted. And the mystery that was attached to being at Mount Shasta is all of the grand experiences that take place within. In our next hour, let's go over some of the things that take place in Mount Shasta, some of the mysteries that take place in there. We have talked about some of the physical things. Let's talk about some of the mental things. And you say, we're just making us more interested in going there, and you're still not getting us there. We'll pursue it. We'll keep on working on it, okay? Mm-hmm.